excision number 12283, reel 4.
Mr. Irving, reel 4.
The rockets, it was surprising, they were quite easy to observe once they had got off the ground, because I mentioned before they appeared to hang for a bit. So we would immediately turn on them and take compass reading. Further down on the next area, there would be other aircraft operating similar to me, and they had been instructed to do the same. So each aircraft in turn would give a heading, compass course. Ops would, collect this information and then could pinpoint the site of rocket launches. Next day, we understood they would send out day fighters, probably Spitfires, who would immediately attack the site. And this was found to be very successful. The Germans were completely taken by surprise at the first. Eventually, they started launching these things with mobile launchers, I understand. But this was a very successful thing, because one could give a very accurate sighting with probably, we'll say, four aircraft giving a compass heading. And of course, the apex of the courses was the exact position.
Did you ever try to intercept those German planes that used to go out into the North Sea off the east coast of England to launch the V-1s from the air?
V-2, yes, V-1s, yes. Well, that was another job. That was difficult. We did. But they used to come in at this was when I was stationed mostly at Coltishaw. We did these operations. And these came in low down, probably maybe 1,000 feet above the sea after they got near the coast. Now, one of the difficulties with radar and our AI equipment was, of course, that you would get, immediately you operated low down, you'd get what we call C returns. The set would be picking signals up off the surface of the sea. And this could blot out a target. So, also, another thing was that these bombers, I'm not sure what they were, what the type of bomber. They were operating at pretty low speed. They would be lumbering along probably in, 150, 180 mile an hour. And once again, operating low. We found it very difficult to make a good contact. I did have the range. Unfortunately, George was off sick, and I was given another operator, and I was scrambled on a decent raid, and we got a very good contact on one of these launches. We got a good contact on a bogey, and I was just starting to make an attack under the instruction of this new operator when he got another bogey signal came across, and he said, I'm changing onto the other bogey. Now, when I operated with George, we always made the arrangement that if we got a target, we would stick on that target and not be diverted. Because when I was a younger man, I used to do a lot of shooting. And if anybody has had any experience of shooting, we'll say at partridge or grouse, if you've got a flight of birds coming at you or crossing, you had the impulse to shoot at the group of birds or the flight of birds. Now, the correct thing to do is to select a bird and take that as your target, which is difficult to do. And this, George and I had decided that if ever we got in where you got more than one bogey offered. He would select the target and we would stay on it. Now this new operator, he went chains over. I hadn't had discussed this with him before. And of course he selected the target. He thought it was a better one, which was turning to port. Well, unfortunately we followed him down, but he dived down and we lost him in the sea returns. And so we lost the combat. I'm sure if I'd had George with me, we would have had more success with this other one.
This is George Millington.
George Millington, who I was my operator for a year and a half. It was very good. It was essential to work as a team, and you got to know each other's ways of working. I did have another one. I chased one back with George when I was operating with George, in which we got a contact on him, and he was heading back. I don't know because I couldn't identify it, but we were closing in, and he was jinking violently. He must have been pre-warned that we were after him, or he was a very careful operator. And we got sea returns because he was low down, but we kept contact. George was able to keep contact on the edge of the sea returns. And we were just closing in. I was closing in close enough to identify him when he went off the map. And we think he went into the sea because the blip was lost immediately. We did a square search, box search as we used to call it, and found nothing. But that was the only other real chance that I might have had at one of these chaps.
Did you ever see a German aircraft actually launch a V-1?
No. I don't think one really could, because all you can pick up off a V-1 was simply exhaust flame, which wasn't a very, very noticeable flame. It was difficult to see them at night. So you wouldn't really know when one came off an aircraft at night. But they were quite coming over in quite numbers. I was nearly, we were in a, when we were at Bradwell Bay one night, waiting to go on ops, on an operation. George and I were in the cinema. Now, one of the things about these V1s, you were all right while the engine was running. But if the engine stopped, watch out. Well, we were in the cinema this night, and it was a cowboy picture, well, remember. And the Indians were giving the cowboys a hard time when we heard a V1 coming over. And, of course, you couldn't fail to notice this engine of the V1. And we all just, there was no point in moving. And just overhead, the engine cut out. So we just all sat and waited. And in about within 3 minutes, there was a loud explosion. And it had just cleared the camp and had floated in the field. The vibration was enough to upset the film. It was remarkable how orderly everybody got up and walked out in good order. But it was quite an experience. That was the nearest I'd ever been to a V1.
According to your logbook, the German Air Force strafed your airfield in as late as mid-March.
Oh, yes, that was rather...
1945.
Yes, that was rather a shock.
Was this Coltishaw?
It was at Coltishaw, yes.
Can you describe what happened?
Yes, well, the usual thing, we went on down to the flights and one either read or sat around or on a bank or played poker. And while the time away, we would have two aircraft out on patrol, and you would probably be informed, well, you can take off at, 21 hours or something like this. And when the operating aircraft came in, you were up replacing him on patrol. And this night would be no flying if the weather was very bad. This particular night, we were in the dispersal when there was a loud bang outside, much to our surprise. And just then the phone rang. And I picked up the phone, and there was a voice from WAFON from up saying, there's enemy activity in your area. Can you get any? Can you get a? Anybody scramble? Can you get a scramble off? And that the phone went dead. Well, of course, we'd all dived under the various tables and things because this loud explosion had been a bomb not very far from the dispersal. And immediately we were told to scramble. Of course, we grabbed chutes and etc. We were in May West. And everybody charged for the door. Well, just as I got through the door, there was aircraft, the drone was being attacked. We could see, and they were shooting up the drone. Well, we dived, George and I dived for cover under the nearest object, solid object. So did everybody else, because we couldn't possibly take off. And I remember running around each aircraft had was in a small dispersal of its own, and therefore it was banked up with earth, of course. And we ran round one side and took cover while the aircraft zoomed in over the drone. And when they cleared, we then dashed out of the aircraft again. We found we'd been, George and I, our first piece of cover had been a Bowser, petrol Bowser, which wasn't a very good thing to hide under. However, we got off eventually, but there were probably all FW-190s, day fighters carrying, flying at night, of course, carrying light small bombs. And that bomb, that first explosion that occurred, had actually hit the chore horse, which was a charging, what we call the chore horse, which was a piece of equipment for charging the batteries of the aircraft and starting up aircraft. It had actually hit it. It was about 50 yards from our dispersal point.
Did it surprise you that the German Air Force was capable of launching such an attack at such a late stage of the war?
Yes, because they didn't normally do this. They had come in below, they'd come in obviously flying very low. It was a fairly clear moonlight sort of night, and these day fighters used to come in below our radar operations, you know, the signals. They could come in low and then do these surprise attacks. That was the only one that I was involved in, but they did do this at different places on the coast.